A federal court has found the U.S. Forest Service improperly granted permits for the Atlantic Coast Pipeline. As Brittany Patterson reports, the ruling could mean pipeline developers may need to rethink the project's route.
Federal Fourth Circuit Judge Stephanie Thacker said the Forest Service failed to protect national forest lands when it issued approvals to allow the 600-mile Atlantic Coast Pipeline to cross the George Washington National Forest, Monongahela National Forest, and the Appalachian Trail. In her opinion, which quoted Dr. Seuss's The Lorax, the judge said the agency repeatedly expressed serious concerns about the environmental impacts of the project. But those concerns were allayed, quote, suddenly and mysteriously, to meet company deadlines. Southern Environmental Law Center lawyer Patrick Hunter said the ruling also says the Forest Service does not have the authority to allow the ACP to cross the Appalachian Trail.
If they want to keep working on this thing, they're going to have to go back to the drawing board.
A spokesperson for the project said they strongly disagree with the court's decision and intend to appeal it. For West Virginia Public Broadcasting, I'm Brittany Patterson.
This week's episode of Inside Appalachia honors the 78 men killed in the Farmington mine disaster 50 years ago last month. West Virginia Public Broadcasting reporter Molly Bourne sat down with journalist and professor Bonnie Stewart to discuss the significance of the tragedy that forever changed a community and led to mine safety and health reforms. Stewart's book, Number 9, The 1968 Farmington Mine Disaster, was published in 2012.
Bonnie, thank you for talking with us. You write in the book that there had been a number of violations at this mine for years and the years leading up to the disaster in 68. And I wonder why those problems persisted.
I think it was the culture of coal mining at the time. In the world of federal regulation, the federal government really had very little control at all. So it was left to the State Department of Mines to monitor the safety in the mines. And when I started working on this, I went to the state archives and pulled out every inspection that had been done on this mine since 1935. And if you followed the course of those inspections, you could see the difference between what was found by different inspectors. There was one inspector, and I don't recall the name, who would go, and his reports were like, there were no problems. Then another inspector would go, and there would be multiple problems found in violations that were found, violations of West Virginia law. There was also another explosion in 1954, and 16 men, I believe, died in that explosion. Had a full shift of men been working, far more people would have died in that. But it was the same problems. Too much gas, too much coal dust, and equipment that wasn't properly maintained.
In Farmington coverage, we often see the image of the smoke pouring out of the mine. And I was struck by the fact that you featured two miners escaping on the cover of your book. And I wonder why you decided to do that.
To me, those were the most powerful images that existed. Plus, Bob Campione, I discovered, worked right across the street from me. So it was pretty amazing that those original photos from the original photographer, who happened to be an intern at the time, gave me permission to use his photos.
My family is from Farmington, and they've told me some of their recollections of the explosion. But I can't imagine what that day was like, and I wonder what are some of the accounts that stuck with you as you were reporting this book.
Well, a couple of them. Joe Magnus sat with me a long time to talk about being at his friend's house, and that his family was getting ready to open a gas station the following Saturday. His father was retiring. He was going to be the last person in his family to have to mine coal. And then, of course, that didn't happen. And, you know, he ran home without his shirt on in the middle of winter to watch the TV account and then to go with his family to the mines.
Yeah, that scene that you describe in the book of him, it was like 2 miles, him tearing down the road shirtless, like in the winter. That was really powerful, I thought.
Well, you can imagine it's, and I think I described it as, if you've got a military family and a black car with two guys shows up at your house, it's like that when you get that phone call that there's something wrong at the mine. It's almost like you know there's a death coming behind.
So you wrote in the book that media coverage of the event, both the explosion itself and the aftermath, emboldened politicians. And I wonder how the news coverage differed with this event.
Well, this was the first time anything like this had been nationally televised. And the crews were there. It was on the nightly news. People across the world could see what had happened and what a tragedy like that looked like.
This disaster is credited with prompting Congress to enact the Coal Mine Health and Safety Act of 1969. And I wonder what sorts of changes did we see with its passage?
Well, for the first time, the federal government, the federal inspectors could actually cite somebody and fine them for the violations. In the past, they could recommend change. And it also required, I forget how many, annual inspections of each mine by the federal government. But it was the beginning of a real federal oversight of for the health and safety of the people who go underground.
I wonder how the disaster still resonates today in your view, and then how it resonates for you personally.
I think when 78 people in a community, as small as we're talking here, lose the heads of households and sons and uncles and brothers, a community is forever changed. And people here don't forget these things. And when you've sat at people's kitchen tables and they've told you their stories, it becomes part of who you are as a reporter. Because I take this work very seriously. Because I'm not the enemy of the people. I'm the voice of the people. I think it's important to remember these stories, because if people don't tell their stories, and if the powers that be do not understand the toll of their lack of responsibility, things don't change. People don't have to die if everyone's doing his or her job, if the rules are followed, safety comes before productivity and above profit. That's what I would hope people would learn from this accident. It wasn't an accident. I hope this is what people would learn from this tragedy that could have been avoided.
Thank you so much.
That was author and journalist Bonnie Stewart speaking with Molly Bourne. To hear the full interview and more about the significance of the Farmington mine disaster, listen to this weekend's episode of Inside Appalachia, Sunday morning at 7, and again, Sunday evening at 6. Paul Kelly's career has spanned 3 decades, including 21 albums and 6 appearances on Mountain Stage. This performance was recorded in October 2017 when he returned with a full band and songs from his album, Life is Fine. Enjoy our Mountain Stage Song of the Week, Rising Moon.
We left the others in the fading light. Walked up that old road on a warm summer night. You said, let's go higher. There's a good chance that soon we'll get to see a rising moon. When we reached the quarry, We could feel the breeze. We stood there a moment, searching the trees. And suddenly we saw it, that big red glow. I took your hand and you didn't let go. And my
That was Paul Kelly with Rising Moon live on Mountain Stage. To hear this performance and more, tune in Friday and Saturday nights at 8 right here on West Virginia Public Broadcasting. West Virginia Morning is a production of West Virginia Public Broadcasting, which is solely responsible for its content. You can keep up with the latest West Virginia news throughout the day on our website, wvpublic.org. Support for our news bureaus comes from West Virginia University, Concord University, and Shepherd University. West Virginia Morning is produced with help from Molly Bourne, Jessica Lilly, Kara Lofton, Liz McCormick, Dave Mistich, Brittany Patterson, and Roxy Todd. Our news director is Jesse Wright. Our producer is Glennis Ford. I'm Teresa Wills.